are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to a new edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. My name's Patricia Traynor. I cover your New York Giants for a variety of places. Follow me on Twitter at Patricia_Traynor, T-R-A-I-N-A, and you will see all the links and whatnot to my work. And joining me on today's program is Matt Waldman. He is the creator of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, RSP for short. You can find that at mattwaldmanrsp.com, and he really focuses in on the skill position players, and who better to talk about quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, tight ends than Matt. Matt, thank you so much for joining me on the program.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be on, Patricia.
Great. Really appreciate you. So, Matt, we've got to go and attack the elephant in the room here. You know, so many people, you know, you look at Eli Manning, and I don't think I've ever seen a player divide the fan base the way Eli Manning has. You've got almost half the fan base wanting him out, half the fan base saying he can still function. When you study Eli Manning, Matt, what do you see? Can he still function as an NFL quarterback?
He can, and I think that the problem is that you have this dichotomy of fan base where it's you see that he's getting older, you see that he's really, you know, as a pocket passer, he's a product of his offensive line. And so when the offensive line was struggling to get cohesion, and it was, you know, through the early parts of the season, and then you had injuries to receivers, then that slows things down. It creates more pressure on a quarterback who is not going to be dynamic with his legs, and that's going to spell trouble. You know, if you put Tom Brady in this offense, you'd have trouble. If you put Jared Goff in this offense, you would have had trouble for most of the year. I mean, so Eli Manning is in that type of range of player where he's going to need more protection. As the season progressed and you saw a little bit of progress with that offensive line, you saw some better performances out of Eli Manning. But again, the conundrum here is there a good enough player in this draft class that warrants taking someone now and investing a high pick to develop, you know, behind Manning or to replace Manning at midseason the way that a lot of teams tend to do when they pick a player early? And that kind of creates this debate with him. But I think that if it were up to me, this is not the year to draft a quarterback in most cases. And I would say that you'd probably want to stick with what you have, unless you can get one or two players who you think have developmental potential, you know, in the third or fourth or fifth round, who happens to fall and you feel like the fit and the potential is good.
We'll talk about some of those players in just a minute, but I wanted to ask you about something that I saw with Manning's play this year, and that is it looked like Pat Shurmur was having Manning roll out a lot more than I can recall him doing in any other offensive system. You know, I guess trying to shatter that whole notion that he's not a mobile quarterback, that he just drops back, stands there, and lets stuff come to him. Did you see that make that much of a difference in terms of Eli maybe recapturing some of what he did well, or maybe even taking his game to a level that, you know, had maybe started to drop off some?
I think that part of that was also just a function of their line where they needed to have a little bit more movement from him. You could even see that with a team like Atlanta, which is, you know, where I live, and you see with Matt Ryan, they moved him. Sarkisian moved Matt Ryan around a lot and asked him to be a little bit more free-flowing with his game. And a lot of that also had to do with injuries along their offensive line and some weaknesses that as a result of that. And you saw that more as the season progressed. And I think with Eli Manning, the thing with him is he's that maybe that's probably the range of player that's a little bit better to describe him, because with Tom Brady, what you get is a very maneuverable player who he slides in the pocket very well, but you're not going to ask him to throw on the move or roll out. But with Manning, you have a little bit more of that along the range of a guy like Matt Ryan. So I think it wasn't, you know, it was probably refreshing for some to see, or something that people didn't expect so much. And I think that he's obviously capable of doing that. But then the question becomes, you know, at his age, at what's kind of known with him, which is the more pressure you can put on him, the more erratic his play gets. And it's and that's tends to be the case with most quarterbacks in the NFL. But with Manning as a whole, you tend to see, you know, instead of him just throwing it away, you see him forcing the ball. And that's always been a big part of his scouting report, even back to his transition from, you know, being a rookie to being a young pro. And it still happens with his game. You see some inexplicable throws or some miscommunications with his receivers. And so I think the rollout simplify things a little bit more to where you have a little bit more quick hitting plays. You're reading, you know, one part of the field. The receivers know that they're going to be, you know, that the routes are going to happen within a quicker rhythm. And I think it was more not just a product of Manning, but it's also a product of what they had to work with. And it was a decision to go in that direction to make things a little bit easier.
Do you think that Manning's offensive lines over the years have matched his skill set? You know, we talk about protections and adjusting them to protect the quarterback. For example, you look in Cleveland and how they kind of adapted a dish protection scheme to work with Baker Mayfield, who's a shorter quarterback. And do you just think that Eli has always had, like, the best fit as far as his offensive protection goes?
No, I don't think he has. And I think that that's what makes his overall evaluation complicated for fans and why there's a split with him. And, you know, when the offensive line has been pretty good, and I would say the same thing with his receiving corps, you know, he's often had to deal with injuries to players or with players who haven't been reliable in terms of being able to stay healthy. You think about a player like Hakeem Nicks and how good he was, but then after a few years, the injuries kind of added up. Steve Smith was a fantastic player who I always liked and felt like could be, you know, was a massively underrated player, and injuries really hurt his career early. And the thing is that with those combinations, with, you know, having an offensive line that is going to provide that continuity, but also with a receiving core where you're going to be able to communicate with those players and they're going to make the right reads and the hot reads and the adjustments that you want to see. It goes hand in hand with the receivers as well as the offensive line. And I think that when you don't have that cohesion in either of those two areas, that prevents a quarterback from really going to that next level of play and maintaining that next level of play on a consistent basis. And I think that's why you see with the best teams that there's always a stalwart 2 to 3 receivers and a pretty stalwart line where those adjustments and communications can be made pre, post, snap that create easy plays. And you don't force the quarterback to have to do amazing things on every down or really, you know, highly difficult plays, because defenses rely on that. They're like, let's try and confuse the opposite side and do something where it forces the quarterback to play outside his comfort zone. And when you look at a guy like Tom Brady, the thing that makes him great, or even Eli's older brother, was looking at complex situations and being able to find the easy solution, even if it's just a simple, you know, 3-yard pass that gets a 7-yard gain and turns a 2nd and 12 into a 3rd and 5 instead of it being a 3rd and 10 or 3rd and 15. And I think that those factors have contributed to Eli Manning kind of having an up and down career in terms of season to season.
You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina and special guest Matt Waldman. We're going to take a short break, come back, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the quarterbacks, focusing on the draft prospects. So stay with us. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants. You're with Patricia Traina and special guest Matt Waldman, and we are talking, we've been talking about Eli Manning. We're going to turn our attention now to some of these prospects in the draft. And Matt, you mentioned in the first segment that you didn't think this was necessarily the year to go out and get, you know, your next franchise quarterback if you're the Giants. Of the, you mentioned there also there was a you know, maybe you pick up a developmental prospect. So of the candidates out there, is there a particular quarterback that you think might have Giants written all over him?
Well, I mean, I think that this year it's going to be tough because I think that, you know, the Giants will probably be looking at a player who is a little, they're going to want to look at a guy who's probably a little stronger arm and fits that prototypical thing, because I think Dave Gettleman is probably more of a traditionalist at the quarterback position. So I don't see him going out and trying to target a Kyler Murray early on, or even a Dwayne Haskins at this point. So you're looking at players like Drew Lock or Daniel Jones, who are guys that may go early. And if they're going to invest in one early, those are the guys that will likely be on the board there. But I think if he's going to go from a developmental standpoint, the three guys that I'm interested in are probably Will Greer, Brett Rypien, and Tyree Jackson. And Greer, to me, is the best of the lot, but again, he's not a strong-armed guy on the level of what you're looking for as that prototypical franchise passer. But I think he has more than enough arm to get the job done. He moves around very well. I think he throws well in terms of getting people, throwing people open. He may need a little bit of an adjustment plane, you know, not in an air raid style type, spread style attack, all the time, and being able to do a little bit more with pre-post snap reads with a more condensed types of formations. But I think that he's probably while he has some inconsistencies, I think he has the strongest upside of those mid-round types of players who I think could progress to becoming a starter. And I think a lot of people, say that Will Greer reminds them of Andy Dalton in that sense. And people may not find that extremely exciting. But again, I don't think this is the type of class it's been for, you know, last year, the year before that. Tyree Jackson's another one. You know, he's a 6'7 guy or 6'6, 6'7, 240 pounds. Doesn't move around great, but he has a big arm. And I think that he's a guy who, you know, with a year or two, you could see what you have and given a chance in terms of, you know, how he'll be able to read coverages and what his progression will be like pre-snap, post-snap. Because I think the biggest thing with the quarterback development at this level going from college to pro isn't so much about the physical skills, isn't even so much about the technique. It's a lot of it is about how quick they respond and process information. And can they do that with a level of confidence where it's kind of like performance, you know, it's like an onstage performance, whether it's an actor or a musician. What you're looking for is when they see certain things change that are very quick, that they can respond in kind and really process everything together, all the physical, mental, emotional, and intellectual elements of the game, and do it in a manner that's just at the speed of instinct. And I think that with quarterbacks, what you see is you see guys like Alex Smith, who were high-end prospects, who may have all the skills, but that really good processing performance aspect where it comes down to that 5 to 7 plays per game where they're just a beat off, and that one being a little bit slow to respond, or they speed things up too fast because, again, their processing isn't strong and their confidence is not really great in those situations, that those make the difference in games. And I think that that's, you know, that's the problem with this class is I see one or two guys who might get there, and Will Greer's one of them.
And, you know, along those lines, everybody seems to be really gaga over Dwayne Haskins, who really has only had 1 year as a starter. So, you know, I'm not, you know, necessarily saying that Dwayne Haskins isn't worth, you know, looking at, but what is the appeal there? You know, if you're talking about a guy who can process stuff, is Haskins the guy, given the system he was in, who can make those adjustments, or is he just someone who has a good arm then can just make the throws and the other stuff just kind of falls into place for him?
I think a lot of it is the unknown. And so what happens with quarterback evaluation is that, you know, when you look at a lot of the GMs and scouts who are out there, it's really kind of you just look at businesses as a whole and the way that HR hires people in big business or, you know, companies do. And it's a lot of it is, how do you cover your assets? How do you, you know, and part of that is you want to have a lot of data. You want to back up your decisions with that data and measurables in a way that so if you fail, you can explain logically why you did. And so a lot of quarterbacks, when you look at how they're evaluated, it's about their production, their, you know, their accuracy percentage, and, you know, and things that you can really put down on paper. But it's a very subjective position. And I've talked about this when I scouted Patrick Mahomes, is that he wasn't a robot. But if he was put in the right system with a team that allowed him to be what he's capable of, he would be, he was my top graded quarterback in the past 5 years. And a lot of that's because of the fact that, again, teams are looking kind of at robot. They kind of grade quarterbacks like robots off an assembly line. And when you look at Dwayne Haskins, you see the high end accuracy numbers. You see the wins, you see the production, you see the size, and they look at the physical prototypes and they think, well, we can get a shot at being able to teach him, you know, give him experience, and if he shows the intellectual capacity to be the to be a NFL quarterback in terms of how he memorizes things on a whiteboard and how he processes the game just in a classroom, then, you know, we incorporate that in the leadership abilities that we think we see, and we'll give it a shot because we know that quarterback is a low end proposition in terms of their success rate, even with guys in the early, you know, at the top of the rounds, it's better, but even in the first or second round, you know, mid to lower part of that, that can be a little bit more difficult. So I think with Haskins, it's more of a projection and of that high round type of player. But the problem is, you know, when you watch his game and the way this offense is set up, it's an offense where it's quick reads. If they want to adapt to making some quick reads and doing more of what you see with, say, Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, maybe he has a fighting chance there to develop into that type of franchise player. But again, it's still going to have to come down to, is he seeing the field well? And there are times when I watch him right now that I still have questions about him missing some wide open looks and his pre-post snap reads that are really going to make a difference between being a guy that you watch and say, ooh, he's a promising player and you want to project great things, say like Mitchell Trubisky. But then watching them and seeing in close games or in difficult situations when defenses adjust that their game falls apart. And I'm worried that Dwayne Haskins is more in that category right now.
You know, last year there was a big debate over the Giants' decision to not take one of the quarterbacks in the draft. You know, a lot of people were hoping for Sam Darnold once Baker Mayfield was off the board at number one overall. You know, the Giants, of course, landed up with Saquon Barkley. I know hindsight's 20/20, but in retrospect, did the Giants make a mistake, do you think, with not taking a quarterback in that draft class? Or can they, or do you feel like they're in a good enough position to where they can maybe afford to wait? If not this year, then maybe next year when the class is supposed to be better.
I think that it would have been nice for them to draft a quarterback like Darnold, and it would have been, I would have looked at that and said that was a good decision. But at the same time, looking at what Barkley is and what he's capable of doing, he's, I know that there's a lot of people out there who talk about that running backs don't matter, and that they, you know, that they don't matter as much, and they don't matter as much as they did in a passing oriented league, but top end running backs do matter. They make a difference. They create problems for opposing defenses because of the versatility that they offer in terms of how you can use them in scheme, and Saquon Barkley certainly applies. So I would not call picking Barkley a mistake, but it will be a mistake if they go too high, I think, with someone in this class and then are committed to this player for the next 2 to 3 years and don't use that capital that they have this year on players that can either shore up the offensive line, improve the pass rush, or, you know, maybe add to that receiving core, stick with Manning for a little bit longer, and get that core team that can be helpful to a younger quarterback who may come out next year or the year after. And I think that that's the thing where maybe fans will get impatient because Manning might be a little long in the tooth for them, or they're tired of seeing the up and down play as a result of a team that's always been a little bit in flux. You know, the Giants have been just good enough to contend at times, and then and then a year later, the bottom may fall out, or they're kind of in that middle. They've oftentimes been in that middle zone where they're not getting the draft picks that to be quite, you know, to improve fast enough. But they're good enough that they're not going to get the, you know, get the premium picks all the time. So it's a, it's one of those things that if it were up to me, I'd say don't, you know, the mistake's going to come this year or next, depending on how they proceed after picking Barkley. The fact they picked him, good. It's a, I think it's a good decision, but it will be a better decision if they continue to build the infrastructure around what a quarterback will need and stick with the one they have. But if they rush to pick one and insert one in right now with a line that's still not stable, with a receiving core that maybe, you know, could add a little bit more stability and get a little bit more development to it, I think then you're looking at compounding your mistake, you know, making that a mistake, and then it could be compounded year after year.
You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traynor and special guest Matt Waubman. We're going to take our final break, come back, and wrap up with some thoughts on the rest of the skill position players on offense. So stay with us. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants. It is a Friday, and you are listening to Patricia Traynor with special guest Matt Waubman, and we are talking about the Giants' skill position players. We've done quarterback, touched a little bit on running back, and Matt, I want to get your take on the receivers and tight ends, and I think let's start with, the receivers. When I look at the Giant receivers this year, not a horrible group, but also it just looked like to me that they had trouble getting open consistently. They struggled against man-to-man. I mean, everybody except for really Odell Beckham Jr., who was really the only guy who could, I think, you know, accomplish those two feats. I mean, what did you see from studying them?
Yeah, and that's I agree completely. You know, you look at a guy like Corey Coleman who came on stretch, but he's always been, you know, he played in a Baylor offense where he wasn't going to see a ton of press coverage. And when he did, he showed some really good skill at Baylor. But in Cleveland, he was a bit of a disappointment. And I think last year was kind of a wake-up call for him. And I think a lot of young players, sometimes what happens is they come into the league, they expect to be able to take over with their athletic ability and that they had that high draft capital. And they expect things to be easier than it is. And they have to grow up some. And I think Corey Coleman is in this phase of realizing that he has to grow up. And he might not be a bad re-sign this year and see if he can continue to put together what he did down the stretch. But I think most of the receivers you have are technicians who would, you know, you look at Coleman, you look at Shepard, you look at Latimer, and you know, Latimer's a big guy, but has never been great as a route runner. He was a guy that got ripped by Peyton Manning early in his career and never really regained the confidence to become the player he was. And he leaned a lot on his jump ball ability and size to kind of box out, but wasn't the technician that he needed to be. You look at a guy like Shepard, he's a terrific technician, doesn't get great separation, and relying on him to be an outside option opposite Odell Beckham probably isn't the ideal thing, where if he could be more of a slot player and then have a second outside guy who can command coverage where safety has to roll over at times to work against that or create conundrums for who to bracket or who to shade that safety towards, then you can have an open middle of the field there. So I think that that's kind of the issue with that team, is that they could use a second player who not only can run routes, but can be that guy who erases, you know, less than pinpoint accurate throws and can be that target who can handle those types of plays. Because in the NFL, a lot of times you're not going to be pinpoint accurate all the time, and you're going to have to make throws where the receiver's going to have to go up and win it. And I think if, you know, while Beckham can do that, having another player who can give that dimension, but at the same time also technically run some technically sound routes and be where he's supposed to be, as well as getting that separation, is going to be important. And I think that would help the Giants out immensely.
And then what about at tight end? You know, Evan Engram in his second season, he had some injury issues. He was a little up and down. He did manage to cut down on the drops, but he didn't really take off until Odell was out of the lineup, which was pretty much what we saw also as in his rookie season. I mean, what did you make of Evan Engram's second year? And above all, how do they get production out of both Engram and Odell when they're on the field at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, I think really the answer to me is, I mean, it may be a little bit what a lot of fans may think, and some may agree that or disagree and say it's a little wild, but I think really Evan Engram isn't a tight end. He's a wide receiver, and I think they need to approach him that way and get another tight end because he's not a terrific blocker. He's basically a big, fast guy. Let him be a big, fast guy and use him on the outside opposite Beckham. Use Shepard in the slot, or you can use Corey Coleman maybe in that capacity as well, or use him in four receiver sets, and then focus on getting a tight end who can be a factor in the middle of the field as a blocker, as well as a guy that you can move around a little bit more. I mean, he's somewhat capable as an inline guy, but that's not his strength. It's never going to be his strength. And I think that if the Giants were to look at him more as a receiver, they would have less dissonance with their team overall and have a little bit better of an idea of how to apply this scheme and not have some glaring weaknesses in the middle of the field or with the possibility of the run. And they're not as predictable personnel-wise based on what they do with Engram.
Going back to Engram's scouting report from last year, can he run the entire receiving route tree, do you think? I know with the Giants, I don't believe he's done that, but is he capable of doing that?
I think he's capable of getting there, yes, because the biggest thing about running the entire route tree is whether you can drop your weight and decelerate to a quick stop. And he can do that. I think that he's also a player that if they commit him to being a receiver, then they can say, listen, drop a little weight, get a little quicker, focus on your maneuverability and flexibility so that, you know, you're maximizing your potential there. And I think that then within a year or two, you're going to see more of a complete route runner in that respect. But I think that the biggest thing for him isn't so much about whether he can run, you know, the dig route or run a comeback and in the curl, which I think he can. It's a matter of whether or not he can get that separation at the line of scrimmage and be efficient with it. And that's something that, again, adding with a little bit of weight loss, a little bit of more focus in one area and dedicating him to that, I think would be helpful, because being a tight end where they're saying, we're going to develop you as an inline tight end. Oh, our inline tight end got hurt now, or our primary receiver got hurt. Now we're going to split you outside. Now we're going to use you in this fashion. It's for Engram, it's been more about, we need you here. We need you there. And as opposed to let's give you time to really develop in these areas where you can get better and better. It's been more about applying him in different spots. And sometimes his weaknesses have shown in that respect, again, due to injuries that have forced him to play in situations where he may have been less than comfortable, but was needed.
I want to go back to the running back position for a moment, because as we saw throughout most of the playoffs with the Los Angeles Rams, we saw how C.J. Anderson complimented Todd Gurley and vice versa. Now, with the Giants, you know, you've got a guy in Saquon Barkley who obviously, you know, if you have your druthers, you want him on the field as much as possible. At the same time, the more he's on the field, that becomes a question of more tread on the tires and hence more exposure to a potential injury. Do you feel the Giants would benefit from getting like a CJ, their own CJ Anderson, or maybe do they have that already in Wayne Gallman?
I think Wayne Gallman's an interesting player, but he's a guy that he's a type of player that's more of a downhill one cut guy who's straight line-ish, and he needs a decent crease to really accelerate. And I think that with Saquon Barkley, you have the luxury of a guy who really can bounce things outside at any moment. He can create a little bit better. And so they're very different types of players. So I think that getting a player whose strengths are more in line with what Barkley does to the extreme would be helpful. And I think that that, and you can find a lot of backs like that, especially in this particular class. You should be able to find, you know, some guys who can give you that receiving element, who can create in the zone game, who can run outside zone better, who can also be a guy who can, you can line up to the outside and who can pass protect for you. And I think that what you have with Gallman is the type of guy that's at the end of rosters who can be serviceable if you really need him in a pinch, but he's not the guy that you want spelling your back, who can still create problems and not make your scheme predictable.
And then final question for me, Matt, if you had to prioritize the Giants' needs at their skill position, quarterback, receiver, tight end, running back, how would you stack them up, and are there enough guys in this draft class to accommodate those needs?
Yeah, there are. And I think that for them, I would say if they're going to keep Evan Engram at tight end, then you go with receiver. And there's a lot of big receivers in this draft class who can run some pretty good routes. So some guys that come to mind are Hakeem Butler, Kelvin Harmon. Debo Samuel could be a fun player, but I think he's more in line of a style that's more closer to what you have in Odell Beckham. But guys like that, same with Miles Boykin out of Notre Dame, these are interesting players. A Preston Williams could be a really good option out of Colorado State a little bit later. But so there's a number of receivers that I think can serve the purpose of what we talked about earlier. And then at tight end, this is a very strong tight end class, in my opinion. So if you're going to move Evan Engram and you decide that you either want to use two tight ends or use him kind of more as that, you know, Aaron Hernandez to Rob Gronkowski type of scenario that the New England Patriots had back in the day, then you could get your Gronk type of player in TJ Hockenson, Irv Smith, Jay Sternberger, maybe even Dawson Knox or Trevon Wesco. All those guys can block. All those guys are very fluid in terms of being able to stretch the seam, and they're pretty dynamic after the catch as well. And I didn't even mention a guy like Noah Fant, who a lot of people like to talk about as a high-end candidate. But if you're looking for a blocker, really high-end blocker, those first five that I mentioned, if it were up to me, I'd probably go ahead and either move Evan Engram and or use him more as an H-back and then go with the tight end, because this tight end class is a good one.
It's interesting because we don't really hear the tight end mentioned as a need for the Giants. But as I have said so many times before, the Giants always see their needs a little differently than those of us on the outside do. And you're really the first person to really, you know, suggest that could be a need for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things that when you look at it, you see Engram on the surface and you want to say, oh, he's going to develop. He's going to be, you know, he's going to become a complete tight end, and he might. But I think that with this team, it's about really figuring out and defining what he is. And once you figure that out and commit to it, then all the other pieces fall into place. And I think that with tight end, also with that position, it does help the run game. It can help the pass protection as well. So it gives you that type of versatility. And because the offensive line is still in a rebuilding process, because the receivers have been up and down, and because of where Eli Manning is, and you're setting up either for the future with a young quarterback, you know, whether it's now or within a couple of years, having a tight end now, especially with this type of talent, it takes a couple of years usually for tight ends to develop if they're complete tight ends, which is why Engram was up and down this year, because he's really, again, more of a receiver. And when they used him as a receiver, well, that was easier. But asking a guy to, you know, take that next level up as a blocker, much harder to do. It's one of the toughest transitions of any skill, of any position on the field, maybe under quarterback. And so I'd say if you get a quality tight end and put him in there, I think that can open up this team.
Interesting stuff. Great stuff. Matt, before I let you go, tell everybody what you got going on, where they can find you on social media, and where your work is found.
Yeah, you can find me at Matt Waldman on Twitter. I'm posting video analysis pretty much daily there. You can also follow my YouTube channel, Matt Waldman's RSP Film Room, which has over about 370 videos on prospects, including you know, game tape sessions where I watch with other writers, analysts, and sometimes players. And then you can also find my work at mattwaldmanrsp.com, where I sell the rookie scouting portfolio. This is my 14th year selling the publication. That's, you know, that goes right now is probably going to cover about 180 players at the skill position, maybe even 190. It comes with a post-draft addendum for people who play fantasy football. There's a it has both a draft focus and a highly fantasy focused part of that, and it comes with a newsletter that's updated monthly, June through December, for those who subscribe. So you can find that at mattwaldmanrsp.com.
Okay, great stuff as always. I want to thank you for coming on with me. And folks, I want to thank you as always for listening. Be sure you tune in with us next week. We'll have more guests, more draft talk. Your Twitter Tuesday questions are, of course, will be featured. So on behalf of Matt Waldman, thank you for listening and have a great weekend.